Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy, that's Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
We've got a dark story to cover on today's program. I'm not going to lie. William Dorian is joining us, and he's been interested in the paranormal since the mid-70s when, together with Eileen Curran, the daughter of the famous medium Pearl Curran, he began channeling the spirit of Patience Worth. Williams has worked as a teacher, social worker, journalist, and theater director. His new book is called The Holy Water Incident, and it is, in fact, his first book. He's here to talk to us about a very unusual story, the true story of a daughter's possession and exorcism. William Dorian, thank you and welcome to our show. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's. I want to know a little bit more about your background and your interest. What piqued your interest into the field of the paranormal back in the 1970s?
Well, I was attending graduate school at Tulane in New Orleans, and my next door neighbor had an aunt who turned out to be Eileen Curran, and he knew I was interested a little bit in the paranormal, and he said you need to come and meet my aunt. So I did, and she told me all about her mother and the Patience Worth phenomena, and so I got interested in that, and she told me that there'd been a book recently written about the Patience Worth thing. This had been back in the 70s, and so I went out and got that, and I read in the book that Eileen, the patient's spirit, which was the spirit of a 16th century Puritan woman, and she said that after Pearl died that she would be able to come back and still channel through the daughter, Eileen. So I went back to Eileen, and I said, did you notice this in there? Have you ever tried it? And she said, no, she'd never even tried it. She was in her 50s by then and had no interest really in the paranormal at all. She'd grown up with it. Her mother was a famous psychic and traveled all over the world giving lectures. And you know, Eileen was, as a lot of kids do, she just revolted against the whole paranormal thing. Anything your parents are interested in, you're not. But she said, well, sure, I'll give it a try sometime if you want to. So we sat down with the Ouija board and just almost immediately got the spirit of Patience Worth and speaking in perfect early modern English, language of Shakespeare and Elizabethan English. And so we just kind of went from there.
Now, Patience Worth, as I understood it, was just kind of a pen name for Pearl Curran.
No, Patience was a spirit. She was the spirit of a Puritan woman who said she was killed by the Indians in the 1600s. And, of course, back then they didn't even let the little girls go to school. Didn't even teach them how to read and write. And she said she'd always wanted to be a storyteller, but couldn't when she was alive. So she came back after death and wrote six novels, and they're all in Elizabethan English, two plays, and I think a couple of books of poetry through Pearl Curran. And Pearl was a relatively uneducated housewife. You know, I think she graduated from high school, but she had no way to have been an expert in Elizabethan English. And the books were analyzed by linguistic scholars at the time, and they were verified as being perfect Elizabethan English. They were also very good. They were novels, and a number of the six, I forget how many, but several at least of the six were bestsellers back in the 20s and 30s.
Do you find it, though, as a paranormal investigator and somebody that researches this as well, I mean, do you find it somewhat interesting that, you know, this woman, Patience Worth, was a storyteller, wanted to write and tell these stories, yet Patience Worth was the name of a character in Mary Johnson's 1900 novel set in colonial America. So she was a fictional character in a novel, so in a storybook, and then this character comes out and also wants to be a writer. I mean, did that... How does that resonate with you? Do you have any thoughts of...
To be honest with you, that's the first I'd heard of that. it could be a coincidence. Could be something in Pearl Curran's subconscious. Maybe she read that somewhere. I don't know. That's really the first I've heard of that in all these years.
Yeah, I just did. That was something that, you know, kind of fascinated me about this story, and I was just curious if you'd had any more information. So I get the concept. I mean, this woman, Pearl Curran, she didn't have the education to write like she was writing. She was, in all honesty, it looked as though somebody was using her as a channel to dictate these books.
And if Patience wasn't who she said she was, it wasn't Pearl writing the books.
All right. And then,
because Pearl just didn't have the education for it.
Talk to me a little bit more about Pearl and what you do know of her story. When did she start getting this communication? Do you know?
Geez, I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but the way I remember it, it was in the early 20th century, sometime around World War I, and she was just a housewife, and she and a friend of hers, just on a lark, decided to start playing with a Ouija board one night, and suddenly they were picking up this Elizabethan. And it just sort of mushroomed. The husband got interested in it, and he was their stenographer. He wrote everything down. And, of course, the Ouija board is a slow and painstaking process, you know, writing every letter down. And after a while, Pearl started just doing automatic writing. And she would sit there, and Eileen says her mother was, she's seen her mother write for Patience and is writing something for Patience and carrying on a conversation with somebody else in the room at the same time, which is a little weird.
Yeah, that seems very weird. So she was kind of... tracking two different timelines, both in the channeling and in the real world, talking to the people that were around her.
Right.
Fascinating stuff. Now, what was your concept of Ouija boards? Was that something that you grew up believing was a bad?
Before,
no. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was in graduate school, so I would have been about 22 or 23, and I'd never fooled with one. I went to the dime store and bought the Ouija board so Eileen and I could do this. And there was nothing scary or spooky or creepy about it. The first night we sat down, it was Eileen and I and my wife and Eileen's niece, and Eileen's daughter was sitting there watching TV while we were playing on the Ouija board. There was nothing scary about it.
All right, and when you started making contact with her, how did that affect you? I mean, was it pretty startling to, you know, be a bit of a skeptic
really.
And have that happen? Or?
Well, while I was still, Eileen and I worked on this for about a year. And I wrote a book at the time about my experiences with Eileen. And that book got accepted for publication back in the 70s by a publisher out in New Mexico. He was in Albuquerque. And so, you know, I was really excited about that. And but even at the time that when Eileen and I were working, I could leave and come back to Nashville and get on the Ouija board with my wife or somebody else, a friend, and I could still pick up patients, even with Eileen not there. And so anyway, the book didn't ever happen because it turned out the guy wanted a series of books about, I was calling it The Return of Patience Worth. He wanted a series of books about patients. And Eileen's husband, Gary, was not at all interested in anything to do with the paranormal, and he was very much against it. And Eileen was pretty subservient to her husband, and when he said no, then that was the end of that. So there weren't going to be any more books. And then the guy didn't just want one book, so that whole deal fell through. But I don't know. I've been picking up patients on the Ouija board ever since. Eileen actually only lived a few more years after that. She died young. She was in her 50s. Don't even really know what she died of. I called down there several years later, talked to Gary. He said, no, Eileen passed away a few years ago, and that was the end of that. That's the last I've heard from her.
Now, did you ever try to communicate with?
I have later, but you mean like over the board with Eileen?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I mean,
I never did actually. Maybe I should.
So wait a minute. Wait a minute. So you'll channel an ancient author, Patience Worth, but not connect with a friend of yours, dear friend of yours, to see what actually
never
happened.
Occurred to me, actually. Maybe sometime she'll come through. I don't know.
Well, that would be, yeah, you should, communicate with her. It'd be interesting to see if she could shed some light on who Patience Worth is. Is that a character name or is it her real name?
Yeah, now that she's on the other side, you know, I really hadn't thought of that before. I should see if I could.
Well, Bill, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help. I'm just here to help. That's all. That's my job. Help authors become better authors. So you've got a sequel to the Holy Water Incident. You'll be able to
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you'll be able to do a sequel to the book of your communications between those two. So see, I'm just Tim. I don't know. We should put that shingle up on the show. Beyond the Darkness, we're just here to help. What do you think?
I like it. Sure, yeah.
I like that.
Okay. Anyway, I know this. We're dabbling kind of in your background, and now we'll start to lead into what you cover in the book and the story that you took on. But, you know, just fascinating to get this kind of communication. Now, did you, using the Ouija board, did you ever try communicating with other spirits, and were you equally as successful?
Yeah. Sometimes I'm from Nashville, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Bell Witch.
Yes, I certainly am. Yep.
Phenomena. Yeah, that's actually took place about maybe 50 miles from where I live, and I grew up with the Bell Witch legend. You know, that's a big thing around here, and. So, yeah, I've picked up the some spirit claiming to be Kate the Witch. Who knows whether it was really was or not. You never know who was going to pop up. You know, you always get somebody wanting to tell their story. It's usually not very interesting.
All right. Now, let's start to trail down the information in your book and the Holy Water Incident, the true story of a daughter's possession and exorcism. This just this is coming out August 8th. It'll be officially released. So just in a few days, folks. Was this a hard story to tell since it was so close to you?
It was extremely hard to tell. The main part of the book happened in 2001, and it happened to my daughter. And at the time it happened, of course, I'm a journalist. I've been in the newspaper business since back in the 80s. And so, you know, I'm used to writing things down. And when this happened, it was so bizarre that I told myself, if I don't write this down, then 5 years from now, I will convince myself that it didn't really happen. It was just my imagination. So I kept a journal, a very detailed journal of what was happening. And then after the possession and the exorcism, I wrote everything down, and it's so close to home. It was really hard to think about, to talk about, and I just put it away and didn't. I told myself someday I'm going to turn that into a book, and the years went by, and I never did it, and then finally, about 5 years ago, I just decided, well, I think it's time. So I turned the journal into a book, and there you are.
All right, we're going to get into that story. But first, Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. You can now watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies all on demand, all for free. No credit card ever needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. You can download Pluto TV on all of your favorite devices free. You can download it on your phone, your Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, heck, anywhere else that you stream. It's now available. Don't wait anymore. Get your entertainment free at Pluto TV. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package that you got after a big promotion, or simply the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. How about high mileage? Well, we already knew that was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet. That way you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which can take you to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers are not available in all areas. All right, we're back, and fascinating story about to unfold, the Holy Water Incident, the true story of a daughter's possession and exorcism. William Dorian, our guest. All right, now, had the paranormal, obviously it was a big part of your life, Bill. Had you made it a part of your family's life as well?
Well, yeah, and that was probably the mistake, I guess. My daughter grew up hearing the stories that I had about patients' worth and my experiences. And, of course, since I said, you know, we're here in the Nashville area and everybody's really into the Bell Witch thing here. So she knew all about that. And we'd been up to the Bell Witch farm and visited that. And so she had grown, you know, every once in a while, we'd get out the Ouija board and play with it. It was a game, you know, it was a parlor trick. And I never saw any harm in it.
Now, when you say it was a game and a parlor trick, does that mean that you might have nudged it from time to time to make things exciting for your daughter?
No, never really had to. It does its own thing.
All right, so you would get these messages coming through. And again, I'm just clarifying for our listeners so sure. they have a better understanding of exactly how that works. All right, so you just play the Ouija board together. And what? Yeah, I'm just curious from that point of view, what were the things that you guys would be looking for? Who would you trying to communicate with? And I'm more interested in what who your daughter thought would have been important to communicate with.
Well, you know, as a kid, she's interested in, am I going to find a boyfriend? Am I going to pass my exams at school?
Now, come on, as a dad, you tell me that she asks, am I going to find a boyfriend? You didn't point it to no. And am I going to pass? Yes. Come on, Bill.
But no, really, usually patience worth would pop up and she would just take over. And, you know, we were just used to that. But, you know, and Brittany would have sleepovers. She'd have the little girls come over, and 9 times out of 10, they would come to me and they'd want to do the Ouija board, and we'd take it out, and I'd get them started, and then I'd leave and go do something else. And, you know, and they would play the games, light as a feather, heavy as a, thick as a board, or whatever that, I forget what that is, but I've seen them pick each other
stiff
up with their fingertips.
Yeah. Stiff,
you know,
as a board, light as a feather, right.
Yeah, little kids do stuff like that, and I didn't think much about it. So I didn't realize it, but after Brittany got a little older, about, you know, 13, 14, or 15, she would take out the Ouija board and play it by herself or with her boyfriend when he would come over. I didn't know they were doing that. And I think that's where the problem got started. But she started, hindsight's better than foresight. If I had it to do over, I don't think I would have ever introduced her to the Ouija board. But I did. It's done, and there you are.
So she would play the games even when you weren't around then?
Yeah, and I didn't realize she was doing it.
And when she's doing it with her friends, I mean, did it take on a more nefarious tone? Was she trying to communicate to other things? Was that part of the story?
I don't think she was trying to, but like, well, she's told me since, you know, like when her boyfriend would come over, you know, they would ask it teenager questions that kids would be interested in. And she said after a while, it would always go dark and it would always, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to steal your soul and that kind of garbage. So when it started doing that, they'd quit.
All right. Well, at least they had
and
that.
I didn't know any of that was going on. So.
Right. At least they were smart enough that when things started getting nasty, they would
they'd
yeah. shut her down and move on. Yeah, that's a very bizarre twist to it. Okay, so how long into messing with the Ouija board before you started to realize there was something else going on?
Well, when she was 15, it was January of 2001, and I'd say, well, that's when the possession started. For a few months before that, strange things had been happening in the house. We'd hear noises, we'd hear voices, things that you know for a fact that you put your car key somewhere and they would turn up somewhere else. Just weird things were happening. And so I was, you know, I'm a theatrical director, and I was directing a play that I wrote at the time. And I had a meeting with the producer one night, and I told, he and his wife are they're interested in, I wouldn't say they're interested, but they believe in the paranormal. They don't poo-poo it. So I was talking to them about these weird things that had been going on at the house, and the wife was Greek Orthodox, and she said, "Well, you know, every year I get some holy water, and I think I need to give you a bottle." And so she went and got it, and she said, "You need to sprinkle this around the house," and you know, she told me some things to say, and do that when you get home. So I did that, and that night when I got home, it was probably about 10 o'clock, and Brittany was still up, so I told her, showed her the holy water, and told her that what we needed to do with it, and she thought that was great. You know, she wanted to help. She was excited, and we went around the house sprinkling the holy water and you know, making the sign of the cross and all the things Ann had told us to do. And we got upstairs, and we sprinkled it around my bedroom. And then she stood, and Brittany was excited and helping, and then she reached a point where she just got really quiet and sat down on the edge of the bed and seemed to have just lost all interest in it. And I thought, well, that's just a teenager thing. And then I said, "Well, come on, we need to go sprinkle this in your room." And she said, "No, I don't want to do that." And
all right, now as her dad, are you thinking, "Oh, she's just a teenager. She's tired. She's bored with this."
Oh, yeah, that's what you think. Yeah,
right.
Just a kid.
She's never having
been interested for a while. Now she, you know, they have the attention span of a gnat, and she's lost interest in it.
So never once did you start to feel like maybe she was dealing with something dark?
No, not by then. It would happen soon, but so okay. I said, and I insisted. I said, "No, we really need to go into your room and sprinkle in that," because most of the things had been happening that we'd hear banging on the wall in her room. Most of the things, the noises were coming from her room when she wasn't in it. And I said, "I really think we need to go sprinkle holy water in there." So I finally talked her into it. We went in there, and as I started sprinkling the holy water around, she's just sitting on the side of the bed, not in the least little bit interested anymore. And I said, "Well, Ann said that I needed to sprinkle some on you too." And when I did that, that's when all hell broke loose. I sprinkled the holy water on her forehead, and she turned into somebody else. I've never been cursed like I was that night.
Now thinking back on it, Bill, when you are doing this throughout the house, is she starting to get more agitated and kind of uncomfortable as this ritual progresses?
Yeah. The more we did it, the more uncomfortable she got. And by the time we got upstairs to my bedroom, she'd lost interest and got, I don't know, she just sat on the bed like she was sitting there waiting for the dentist to come take her teeth out. It was strange. So by the time we got to her room, it was, well, if you've seen the movie The Exorcist,
right?
That's an exaggeration. That's a Hollywood, you know, they take it way further than what really happens, but they don't really take it that much further. It's pretty close.
Yeesh. Well, was there anything strange? Yeah, was there anything strange happening during this kind of holy water incident? I mean, was aside from when you got it to sprinkle it on your daughter, I mean, were you hearing noises? Were there any bangings during?
No, there wasn't any of that.
Okay. All right. So as far as you knew, this was just, you know, this was just more kind of just to appease both of your minds. You weren't doing it because you were hearing things at the time.
Not at that exact time. We'd heard all that stuff before. But while we were doing it, it wasn't, no.
All right. So now you've gone through the house, sprinkling the holy water, doing the prayers, sealing rooms, and it comes to the time to do the same with your daughter, and you sprinkle the holy water, and all hell breaks loose. We'll find out more about the story when we return. Bill Dorian, our guest, the holy water incident, the true story of a daughter's possession and exorcism, when we return to Beyond the Darkness. The hit podcast based on the Emmy-nominated A&E series Cold Case Files is back with new episodes on Podcast One. Listen to powerful stories of crimes almost forgotten by the passage of time, with interviews of the people involved as investigators shine a new light on these cases and bring those responsible to justice. Download new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
And don't forget, guys, every Tuesday, Dave and Tim deliver you the best in true crime talk radio, True Crime Tuesday. We've been doing this now with Patreon, I think going on 2 years, a little over 2 years. We've got a lot of great episodes up there and have had a fantastic opportunity to provide you with some of the best true crime content anywhere. So if you haven't already subscribed, we just ask you, subscribe now. It's only $5 a month. You get 4 brand new episodes a month. That's a buck and a quarter an episode. Plus, it gives you access to all of the past archives. So really, when you break it down, you're just paying pennies per episode for all of the great content that we provide you every Tuesday with True Crime Tuesday. You can find more information on True Crime Tuesday by going to darknessradio.com. Or go directly to patreon.com and keyword True Crime Tuesday. Subscribe now, only $5. Remember, when you support our programs, when you support True Crime Tuesday, you help support this program as well and keep it limited in commercials and keep this program free in our archives for, I think it's up to 90 days. So please continue to show support and love for this program by supporting our True Crime podcast every Tuesday. True Crime Tuesday, the best in True Crime Talk Radio. The Holy Water Incident, the true story of a daughter's possession and exorcism. That's what we're discussing today on Beyond the Darkness. William Dorian, the author and survivor of this story. And this took place, you said, in 2001, correct, Bill?
Right, yeah.
Now, just
to reset,
you had been playing Ouija board with your daughter for how many years up to that point?
She was 15, so I'd say, you know, 7 or 8, once she got old enough to be interested in it.
All right, and once she started playing it, and how old was she in 2001?
15.
Okay, so she'd been around this for enough time and had dealt with this, but you believe that this took place in the time she wasn't playing with you in the safe zone. It was when she was messing about and doing it with her friends or on her own, that's what really kind of caused this dark.
Yeah, I think as long as, you know, if I were there, we were safe. But she started dabbling with it on her own and going places with it that I wouldn't have let her go.
All right. Now, you were telling the story of how you'd been hearing things. And again, just a brief explanation, you'd hear pounding and footsteps. Most of it seemed to emanate from her room, correct?
Usually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And you have a friend who gives you some holy water, tells you this is probably the best way to handle this, and go about clearing the home. And then once you're done clearing the home, it's time to clear your daughter. So you you do all the rooms, you're clearing the house, working together. She's slowly becoming more agitated. And when it gets time to sprinkle the holy water on her, and she says she doesn't really want you to do that, did you press and ask why, or try to get any understanding of that?
Well, when she said she didn't want to, that was my clue, you know, something's bad, wrong here. I had a really bad feeling about it when she said she didn't want me to put holy water on her. And I did anyway, and she reacted. It was like she acted like I'd put battery acid on her. And it got, you know, I kind of hesitate to, you know, go into detail about what actually happened. You know, all that's in the book, and I think I write a lot better than I talk. But just suffice it to say that it was bad.
Was there paranormal activity emanating from her, or was it paranormal activity in the room around her when you started to sprinkle that holy water?
Both. She had a strength that a 15-year-old girl shouldn't have. And when I sprinkled holy water on her, she threw herself down under the floor, and she was banging her head against the floor. And so I knew, I've got to stop that. I don't know why she's doing this, but I've got to stop her. She's going to hurt herself. So, you know, I had to pin her down to get her to stop. I was afraid she was going to hurt herself. And it was like holding down a truck driver instead of a 15-year-old girl. She shouldn't have been that strong.
And she making any noises, voices emanating from her, or is it her?
Growling and animalistic noises, and the voice that she was used, she was telling me that, you know, I'm going to take your daughter to hell and you'll never see her again. And it wasn't Brittany's voice. It was a man's voice. It wasn't a little 15-year-old girl. And so I'm barely able to hold her down and keep her from hurting herself because she seemed intent on banging her head on things. So at the time, my mother was staying with us to help me take care of, because I was divorced, and so my mother was staying with us to help me take care of Brittany. And I called down for her, and, you know, gosh, I guess by then she was nearly late 70s or 80 or so, and she came upstairs, and of course she was a real trooper about it. I mean, she didn't hesitate to help me, and, you know, she helped me hold her down, and it took the both of us to hold her down. And after a while, I was running out of holy water, because when I'd sprinkle holy water on her, it would calm her down sometimes. And sometimes Brittany would come back and be herself, and she would cry and say, you know, they've got me in a dark place, and I can't get away, and I hear them talking to you, and it's not me. And she'd go back into the dark place.
How does that, I don't mean this to sound flippant, but as a father, somebody that loves their child, and you're hearing this, how is that impacting you at that moment?
No, it's heartbreaking. It really is. And, you know, now I've done a lot of reading, I've had a lot of experience, and I know if it had happened to me now with the knowledge I have now, I would have been a lot better equipped to handle it. But at the time, I didn't know anything at all about it. I had no idea whatsoever to do. didn't know. I didn't have a clue, and I was scared to death. I really felt like that, you know, this was the end. They were going to take Brittany, and she never would come out again.
Now, just to give us a timeline again, this happens the night that you're doing this blessing throughout the house. And how long did the incident take place that night once you began sprinkling the holy water on her?
I'd say the whole thing probably lasted about 6 hours from the time we first started sprinkling the holy water, because it ended up, I had my mother go call Brittany's mother to come over and help us. So she came over and had the three of us holding her down and none of us knowing what to do. And eventually, you know, just for lack of what to do, we called 911 and they sent paramedics, and paramedics came and took her away in a stretcher, and she was fighting and kicking and biting, and they're just like a wild animal. She didn't act like a human. She acted like a wild animal.
How did the emergency workers respond to this? I mean, did they just think your daughter was tripping out on drugs?
Very professional about it. You know, I thought they were, you know, would have the attitude of, oh, this kid's absolutely nuts and put her out of her misery or something. But they just came and they were very calm. They took it in stride. I guess they've seen worse. I don't know.
Well, what do you tell them? I mean, what, you call 911. My daughter's possessed. I need help.
I wasn't the one to call 911. It was my mother. I don't really know what she told them. Knowing her, because she didn't really believe in all this stuff, she probably said, you know, we've got a teenager over here and she's having a seizure. That would be my guess, what she said. But anyway, the 911, the paramedics, they were just great. They were kind, and they subdued her. They had to strap her down, and they put her in an ambulance, and we went to the hospital.
All right. The entire way to the hospital, is she still flipping out, or have they hit her with Thorazine to try to break her down? What's the scenario?
Well, she wasn't quite as rambunctious as she had been here, you know, and they had her strapped down, so there wasn't a lot movement-wise she could do. But she was still foaming at the mouth and growling by the time we got there. And the hospital in our area, it didn't have a psych ward, and that's where they wanted to take her, was to a psych ward. And I said, you know, she's not crazy. She has no history of mental illness. There's nothing wrong with her. She's not crazy. And I tried to tell them what happened, and of course, nobody believed me when I mentioned demons.
Did they want to take you to the psych ward next?
They pretty much looked at me like I needed to be in there with her. They were not, they just kind of rolled their eyes and ignored me. And finally, they transferred her to a juvenile psych ward at a different hospital in downtown Nashville. And eventually she calmed down. But one thing I brought out in the book, and this is kind of an important part of the book, when this happened, you know, we were Episcopalians. Brittany had been baptized an Episcopalian, and, you know, it's of, I don't know if you know much about the church or not, but it's ritual-wise, it's very similar to the Roman Catholic, and they do have the rite of exorcism. And the first thing, when we got to the hospital and I got to a telephone, this was back in the days, before the days when everybody had a cell phone, first person I called was my priest, because not only he had been our priest ever since Brittany had been a baby, he baptized her. So not only did I feel he was our priest, I felt like he was my friend. And I told him what had happened, and I knew, you know, he would just jump into his car and rush out and do an exorcism and help me. And his reaction was, well, you know, Bill, that's really not my area of expertise. I really don't know anything much about that. So my wife is, of course, Episcopal priest can marry. My wife is in the area, and I'll tell her to come to the hospital. So she did. She came to the hospital, and she sat and prayed with us. And by then, Brittany had pretty much calmed down and was mostly back to Brittany instead of the demon. The demon would come out every once in a while, but mostly it was Brittany by then.
Were you watching for flickers to see if your daughter was just tricking, you know, playing some kind of elaborate hoax that got out of control? Were you watching for moments of her to get that kind of, shit, have I taken this too far?
I remember nurses would come in there and ask her questions, and she'd be perfectly rational. Oh, yeah, I'm fine. No, I'm okay. I want to go home now. And then the nurse would start to leave, and I'd see Brittany look at the nurse out of the corner of her eye with this kind of, and it's something I didn't tell you when we were talking about when the possession first started, her eyes just turned black. And it's not really a coloration situation so much as it is, it's just there's no life in her eyes. And when the nurse would walk away, she'd give the nurse this evil look. So I knew it was still in there. And so anyway, she...
Right. Now, are they looking at her, doing an MRI, brain scan, anything to see if she is epileptic? What do they find? Everything's
fine. Yeah, everything's fine.
So what are they telling you on the side? Are they saying, we think your daughter is on drugs, or we think that she's seeking attention?
Well, of course, they want to know if she had any drugs, and I say, not that I know of. As far as I know, she's perfectly straight. But you know, they were sure it was schizophrenia or some kind of mental illness, and they wanted to examine her, and they kept her in the psych ward for a couple of weeks and couldn't find anything, and the psychiatrist wanted to start seeing her on a regular basis, and he was convinced that it was mental illness, but he had a plan, of course. And but I couldn't, my priest refused to do an exorcism. And then we got to the point where they were going to let her come home from the psych ward, and I knew that whatever was in there was still in there because I could see it in her eyes. And I felt like I needed to find somebody to perform some kind of exorcism. So I called the Catholic diocese in Nashville, and I talked to them, and they were very nice, very polite. I'll give them that. And the priest, he said, well, you know, it really does sound like a genuine possession to me, but our process is so long and involved and drawn out, and we would have to have her examined by psychiatrists. And he said, sounds to me like you need help now, and we couldn't give you help now. We'd have to even get permission from Rome before we could even do anything. So that could take months, and I didn't have months. So then I went back to my friend.
Let me get this straight. Wait, let me get this straight.
Sure.
You know what, Mr. Dorian? Yeah, it. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a classic case of possession. But we can help you. It's just going to take a few months to get to that.
Yeah.
What was your response to the church?
Hang in there a few months.
What? What?
That was pretty much their attitude.
How did you?
They were nice about it, and they didn't act like I was crazy, which that's how the doctors and nurses at the hospital acted, was that I was as crazy as Brittany. But, you know, the diocese, they were very supportive. They just said that it would take months to even get to as far as an exorcism. So I went back to Ann.
How did you not just go in and drag them out by their collar and tell them, get your ass to my house and help my daughter out?
Bring your little clerical collar and come with me. I was really distraught, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was dealing with. I didn't have a plan. So I went back to Ann, because she's Greek Orthodox, and I told her, and she said, well, you know, talk to my priest. And so I went and talked to this Greek Orthodox priest, and he was really nice and very supportive. And he said, yeah, from what you've told me, it sounds like a classic case of possession, and I'll be glad to do the exorcism. But now, you know, if I do it, you guys are going to have to start coming to my church. And then he gave me a list of the things that they believed and the things that we would have to do. And I knew if Brittany ever came out of this in one piece, she was not going to go along with giving up rock and roll music, because that was part of it. He said that rock and roll music led to demonic possessions. So I thanked him.
What kind of town do you live in? Did Kevin Bacon come there and get a list for dancing
it was,
too?
You know,
what's going on?
This Nashville is the buckle of the Bible Belt, and is very, very conservative area. And these are just, you know, it's backward. It's much, much better now, but especially back then, it was kind of backward.
Season one, Bill. This isn't 1954 you're talking about. This is 2001.
No, in Nashville, I'd say it was about 1954 back in 2001.
Wow. Crazy.
You got to remember, this really, Nashville is the center for all of these fundamentalist religions. And it's the biggest publishing city in the United States for religious literature, and it's we're talking about fundamentalist religion. We're not talking about, you know, the metaphysical denominations, none of those guys. So anyway, everybody has turned me down. The Episcopalians have turned me down, the Catholics, the Greek Orthodox. Well, he was going to do it, but I had to go down a road I knew Brittany wouldn't go along with. So went to a friend of mine in the theater who's
Bill, wait, just one more question on that. One more question.
He believes in the paranormal. And
Bill, a quick question on this.
Sure.
So why not just tell the priest, okay, yeah, we'll come to your church. We'll abide by all of this and just have him do the exorcism. Or was he threatening, well, you know, I'll do this. I'll give you the exorcism.
No,
you have
take
to
it away.
Come, and then if you don't show up to church, I'm going to send the demon back to you. You know, why not just tell him what he wanted to hear so that your daughter could get that help?
Well, I probably should have, you know, again, hindsight's better than foresight. Looking back on it, that would have been a way to go. But I didn't do that. So I was talking to a friend of mine, and he suggested calling. He said, do you know who Lorraine Warren is? Ed and Lorraine Warren. I said, no, I have no idea. Don't know anything about it. And he told me about the Warrens, and he said, see if you can get in touch with them. So I did. I got on the internet and found their website and all that, and I sent Mrs. Warren an email, and she answered me. She was very nice. She said, well, it does sound like you've got something that we could deal with, but at this point, my husband Ed is in the hospital. He's not doing well, and I think he died pretty soon after that. I'm going to refer to you to my nephew, John Zaffis. So, okay, great. So she gave me John's phone number. So I called John. He was extremely nice, very sympathetic. I sent him the journal that I had kept up to that point, and he said, yeah, you need somebody right now. He said, we're in Connecticut, and he said, how are you fixed financially? And I said, I'm a writer. I'm a poor writer. I have no finances. And he said, well, it would cost us a lot of money to bring our crew down there. And he said, I'm not even real sure we could work you in right now anyway. But he said, don't you know any local psychics? He said, you don't have to have a priest. You can have a psychic can do this. And I did actually know a psychic. A friend of mine was a psychic. She used to write for me for a newspaper I edited. So I called her, and she said, yeah, sure, I'd be glad to. So her name was Laurel, and she's passed away by now. But Laurel came out and did the exorcism, and that's how it all panned out.
Now, will you make it all just sound like, oh, she showed up, we had the cup of tea, she did the exorcism.
And now everybody's happy. Well, it didn't work out that way. No.
Now, when she agrees to help you with this, I mean, she comes in, and from the point that this first holy water incident happened until the day that you had her exorcised, how long a period of time are we talking?
2 weeks.
So 2 weeks. In that 2 week interim, what's it like at home, Bill? I mean, is it bonkers?
I'd never dealt with anything like this before, and I was afraid to go into Brittany's room because I was afraid, well, something was in there. Maybe her room's haunted or something. And my mother wouldn't go into her room. It was weird. So anyway, Laurel comes out and agrees to do the exorcism, and she gets here about, we bring Brittany home from the hospital. That's about 6 o'clock at night. Laurel gets here about 8, and Laurel stayed until the sun was already up. By the time Laurel left, it was an all-night affair. Anything that I would wish on anybody.
No, I wouldn't guess. You're squaring off. I mean, you're watching your baby girl fight essentially for her physical and spiritual life.
Right.
And you're there with this, not sure where things are going to go. Does your mom involve herself in this, or because she really didn't believe in the paranormal, did she try to distance herself?
Oh, no. She was all with us, 100%. She really didn't know anything to do to help. I mean, about her only function in it was she would sit there and go get Laurel a soda every once in a while if Laurel acted like she was thirsty, and she was kind of there to assist. There were times when we had to hold Brittany down again, and my mom helped with that, and so there we had me and my ex-wife and my mother and Laurel trying to hold down this 15-year-old girl who's had the strength of two truck drivers on cocaine.
Good grief. Now, during all of this, Are they threatening you? I mean, does this thing seem to know who you are?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Knew exactly who we were. And we had different, we had threats. We had different languages that I did not know. I mean, being in the theater, I'm pretty familiar with accents and dialects, and these are languages I'd never heard before. Laurel, however, seemed to, she understood, but it was, she could communicate with what was in there. And I'm not sure whether she was because she understood that language, or I imagine it was more a matter of she could communicate, she could understand it because she psychically knew what it was saying. So we talked to it, and we had different entities coming in and out all night long. Good ones. They weren't all bad. There were good entities in there. It turned out that there were over 1,000 entities in there.
1,000 entities.
Some of them were actually good.
Well, that's a weird twist to the story, that there were non-malevolent energies within her. Was that a surprise to you as well?
A little bit. Brittany had always been, I've always thought she was psychic, and Laurel had told me ever since Brittany was a little tiny thing that she had psychic ability. And I remember when we used to live in this old restored Victorian house when Brittany was about 4 or 5 years old, and Brittany would talk to people who weren't there, and there was one in particular that she called it her lady, and we'd drive up to the house, and Brittany's in the back seat in her little car seat, and she said, "Oh, look, there's my lady." And of course, there was nobody there. And she would stand at the bottom of the staircase and point up to the top and say, "Oh, my lady's up there." Or she'd be sitting at her little tea table, you know, playing with her dolls and talking to somebody. And I'd say, "Who are you talking to?" "Oh, it's my lady." So I just figured, you know, imaginary friend, really. Didn't really think a whole lot about it until I saw her.
And how did that shift your life?
Well, it was interesting. At the time, I was working at a newspaper at night, and I was teaching classes at Cumberland University in the daytime, and which didn't give me a lot of time to sleep. But I'd come home from the newspaper and get a few hours sleep and get up and go to teach. And I remember one day the alarm clock went off. I'm awake, I look around, and standing down at the foot of the bed is this woman dressed in 1940s attire, and when it was in color, it wasn't in black and white, she was in color, but I could see her, and she looked, it was like a hologram. I could see her, but I could also see through her, and she smiled at me, and I reached over to turn off the alarm clock, and when I looked back, she was gone. So I'm just assuming that was Brittany's lady. I never saw her again. That's the only time I ever saw her. But it was a little strange.
Well, yeah, a lot of strange. During this exorcism, how are you, you know, I mean, she's casting things out. Are you feeling anything? Are you hearing bangs, knocks, screams, yells, not just from your daughter, but from other places?
No, nothing like that. And I've seen that in the movies, you know, where the whole house shakes and wind blows through and the chandelier rocks back and forth. No, there wasn't anything like that. It was all coming from Brittany.
The story would be a lot better if that happened. Could you just tell us it happened? Yeah, it'd be a lot cooler. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to make light of what your daughter.
Yeah.
But all right. So she, she goes through this. It takes, what'd you say, 6 hours for that complete exorcism?
It was from about 8 o'clock at night until about, the sun was already up, so it was sometime between 6 and 7 the next morning when Laura left. So about 10 hours, I guess.
Were you
confident? We had all kinds of people coming, going, and
were you confident at that point that your daughter was clear?
Yeah, because I had known Laurel. She was a trusted friend, and I'd known her for a long time, and I really felt like she'd done a good job. And Brittany acted normal for the first time in 2 weeks, and, of course, we were all exhausted. But I really thought that was the end of it.
All right.
It wasn't, but that was.
No, huh? How long did it take before this thing's ugly head started to rear itself again?
Not long. And how it manifested was, okay, one of the entities that was in Brittany was, and Laurel said this is, he called himself Kalikalik. And Laurel said he was a fallen angel who had turned himself around and was now trying to help people. Okay, that was Laurel's story. And he started out communicating in one of these weird languages that nobody but Laurel understood. And after a while, she told, could you speak in English because they can't understand you? So then Brittany starts talking in English, but she has an Irish accent. And he said, well, I'm Spence. He called himself Spence. And very gentlemanly fella, nice guy, terrific sense of humor. And he said, I'm here to help. I'm here to help. I'm here to help you get these demons out. So for a while there, it was like every once in a while, Laurel would ask Spence to come back through and tell us how many were left. And so even after it was all over with, Spence would come through. Brittany suddenly turned into a channeler. She'd never done this before in her whole life, but after the exorcism, she channeled spirits on a regular basis for about a year. And Spence came through lots of times. And he was always, I really always enjoyed talking to Spence. He was funny.
Now, Spence is this fallen angel who was trying to repent?
Yeah, formerly a fallen angel, supposedly. And he was always hungry. And he'd always want to know what was in the fridge, and we'd have to sit down and eat with Spence. I remember one, and this is in the book, my mother had a birthday just a few weeks after all this happened, and so we took her out to a restaurant for a birthday party, and on the way to the restaurant, Brittany's sitting in the seat next to me, and she just falls forward just like she's unconscious. And I thought, oh, my God, here we go again. And then she sits up, and it's Spence. She's fine. It's just Spence. And I said, well, you know, we're on our way to a birthday celebration for my mother. Could you let Brittany come back? And he said, oh, no, she said it's okay for me to go. So Spence went to the restaurant with us, and he interacted with everybody and just had a grand old time and entertained everybody there. And once we came home, he let Brittany come back. So we had Spence a lot.
Did you ever have her Did you ever evaluated for dissociative behavior or multiple personality?
Oh, we had numerous psychologists and psychiatrists and therapists and all kinds of tests. And I remember one we went to, and he was a psychologist, and he was sitting there talking to Brittany, and she was still underage, so I could sit there too, you know. If she was over 18, I couldn't have gone in. But she was talking to this guy, and suddenly she starts channeling some woman with an English accent, and the psychologist said, I don't know how to deal with this. You need to take her to somebody else. I can't deal with this. So he pretty much kicked us out of his office.
Did he believe that it was a psychological aspect or a problem then? Or was he a believer that this was something far worse?
I don't know what he believed, to tell you the truth. I tell you, it was one of these, the Agape group. I don't know if you've heard of them or not, but it's like a Christian therapist thing. And my ex-wife had set this up, and I didn't really like the idea of the whole Christian thing, but that's why we were there. And he said he couldn't deal with it. He didn't know what it was, and he couldn't deal with it, and that was the last time he saw her. But we had the channeling off and on for a good year, and that finally kind of played out after about a year. And occasionally Spence would come back in over the years. We might see him two or three times a year. He'd just pop up. You never know when he'd show up. And off and on, 15 years.
Yeah, would she ever deal with dark forces trying to make their way back in? And did she give up playing with the Ouija board?
Oh, yeah, we both gave up playing with the Ouija board. I don't think I've touched one since. But it went on. Different things happened for the next 15 years. Brittany graduated from high school, but because of this, she's been under the care of psychiatrists ever since. And most of them just kept saying, well, she's bipolar or she's schizophrenic, or and had her on all these drugs to keep her sedated. But I knew that the kid's not crazy. And so we finally found a good psychiatrist here in Nashville who said, yeah, I believe it happened. And what's wrong with her is that she has PTSD from the trauma that she went through when she was 15. That's all that's wrong with her. So this new psychiatrist has the medication situation under control, and she's been doing a lot better, but took us a long time to really find a psychiatrist that actually believed us. Took a long time.
And once you found somebody that believed you, how were they able to help? I'm just fascinated by that aspect.
Well, only in that she pretty much has regulated the medication so that the ones that didn't believe us had her on all the wrong stuff, which was just making things worse. But anyway, over the years, like I said, Spence would come in and out every once in a while, and I honestly liked Spence. Spence was a lot of fun. Very terrific sense of humor. But one day, when I was writing the book, when I was, this would have been about 2016 or 17. I told Brittany, you know, I'd really like to see if you could channel Spence and see if I could get him to give me a good quote for the book and tell me, you know, give his take on things. And so we, that was great. We were going to do that. And I have a friend who has an old, she's very psychic, and she has an old haunted Victorian house about 25 miles out of Nashville. We were going to have the session in her haunted house. And I don't know if you know Brett Oldham. Brett is
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
He's a semi-regular on that Ancient Aliens series they have on the History Channel. He's written several books about alien abductions. And he's also into the paranormal. And he had a spirit box, and he was going to bring the spirit box, and we were going to try to record Spence and get his take on things for the book. So the day before this was all supposed to happen, Britt comes to me, and she, not Britt Oldham, Brittany, my daughter, she says, you know, I don't think I ever want to channel Spence again. I said, why? She said, you know, I've thought about it, and I just have a really bad feeling about Spence. I don't think he's who he said he was. Okay.
Did she go into that a little more of who she thought he might
well,
be?
Well, we... Not right then, but we did talk about it, and I talked to a couple of other psychics about it, and they talked to Brittany, and it turns out that, oh, and I've left out one little thing. There was another exorcism after Laurel's because little things kept happening, and we had... an exorcism done by a voodoo shaman. He calls himself a Sangoma. And a guy that I met here in Nashville, he was a friend of Laurel's. And he was convinced at the time that Spence was the actual demon. And I told him, no, that can't be. Spence is a nice guy. He was helping Brittany. I saw it. He was there to help her. But Tommy, that was a Sangoma, which, and he's from South Africa. He has this thick Afrikaner accent. He's hard to understand. But he said, no, Spence is the demon. So he did an exorcism, which didn't work because Spence came back within a few days, but... Always wonder if maybe Tommy was right.
Wow, Bill, I mean, you've got the patience of a saint. I mean, that had to be heartbreaking. And, you know, did it ever push you to the edge of sanity dealing with all this?
I've been on the edge for about 17 years now with this.
I bet.
Like walking on a tie wire.
Wow. Everything pretty much under control at this point then?
At this point, and we have pretty much decided that Spence was the entity that was causing all the trouble. She won't channel him anymore. Haven't heard from Spence in years, 3 or 4 years, and I think Tommy was right. I think Laurel was wrong about this one. That Spence was not there to help. He was the actual main entity that was causing the trouble.
Well, I'm glad you're able to get your daughter back and kind of get this thing shut down. And we both know that, you know, not all cases of possession end very well. So I'm glad that, you know, even though it was a long struggle, you've got your daughter back and things are better. And thank you.
Better. I wouldn't say, you know, all ended happily ever after because she's always going to be scarred by this. She has the PTSD from the trauma, and she will always have to deal with that.
Understandable. But I'm glad she's still on this side with us, and that, like I said, you wrestled back her life from that demonic force. Bill, the book is fascinating. I hope people will pick it up. We have a link to it in today's podcast, so when you check on there, you'll be able to see a link. You can order The Holy Water Incident, The True Story of a Daughter's Possession and Exorcism. That comes out later this week on August 8th. Go pre-order it right now. And remember, when you order these books, folks, also give a review of the books, because that really helps authors like this get more exposure. And when more of these books are being reviewed and shown, they get a spotlight shown on them on Amazon, which will keep more fascinating people coming forward with their stories. Bill, thank you so much, and we wish you and your daughter the very best future.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
We will be back again with you guys next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. Remember, tune in Tuesday for True Crime Tuesday, the best in true crime talk radio. You're not going to want to miss this. We've got fantastic episodes. Go sign up right now. Stop waiting. Help support your buddies, Dave and Tim. We've been doing this 14 years almost. We could use your support now. Subscribe to True Crime Tuesday. That helps not only that program, but the program you're listening to right now. Go to darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime Tuesday banner for more information and ways to subscribe. $5 a month. That'll get you a whole lot of entertainment. All the brand new episodes every Tuesday, and all of our past episodes archived back for the last couple of years. Go do it right now. What are you waiting for? Check it out. darknessradio.com.